Alderman Brendan Riley joins the show, 42nd Ward. You were downtown for something special. I know a lot of my colleagues are out there, Bob Surratt and many others. The dedication of the Jack Rosenberg honorary street sign. How are you? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I had to actually go home and take a shower. It was so hot out. Suit.
I said you feeling it today after we've been blessed with such gorgeous kind of low humidity sort of August weather. And here we are feeling more like summer. But how was it out there?
It was great. Obviously, Jack Rosenberg touched a lot of people and certainly a lot of current broadcasters were mentored by him. And for folks who don't know, he was really not the face of WGN Sports, but really the writer. He gave a lot of the material that Jack Brickhouse and Harry Carey used over the years. He wrote speeches for them. And really taught a lot of journalists, sports journalists, how to apply the trade as they were coming up. So it was, I think, a well-deserved honor. Bob Surratt led the charge on that initiative, him and his team. And certainly it's, I think, fitting that Mr. Rosenberg's sign will be just a few feet away from Jack Brickhouse.
Yeah.
So it's a good day and a good way to celebrate a great Chicagoan.
Yeah, fitting thing. And I should tell everyone that WGNRadio.com, a good place to go. There is an hour-long conversation he had with Dave Ennett about his experiences working with the legends and all that he contributed to the world of sports here at WGN. Pretty cool stuff. Alderman, I want to ask you, too, today's a sad and somber day, too, because we've lowered the flags all across the city in honor of Officer Ella French. A lot of officers heading over for, I think it's a visitation for her today, some sort of memorial, right?
That's right. Today's the visitation until 9 p.m. It's 3 to 9. And then tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., Cardinal Supich will preside over the funeral for Officer French. And, you know, the entire city, the entire state is heartbroken over the loss of Officer French. And, you know, we're feeling terribly for her family, but also for her broader police family. And it's worth mentioning that in addition to the city's flags being at half staff, so are the flags throughout the state of Illinois. This is a tragic, terrible thing that never should have happened.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder, how confident are you in the crime-fighting policies we have here? Where would you say the conversations are being directed now in terms of how we can do better?
I'm not at all pleased with the direction things are going with public safety. It's pretty clear the current strategies are not working, and there needs to be a complete and total top-down reevaluation on the strategy. One of my chief concerns is that we've had a significant attrition rate over the last 2 years. Some 1,100 police officers have left the force during that time, and the department leadership also decided around the same time to pull almost 900 officers out of police districts to create these specialized tactical units. And tactical units are great. They help us manage a lot of the big protests and the major events that occur. But those units aren't familiar with the local geography and context and neighbors and neighborhoods. And they don't report directly to the local police commander. So they're very hard to direct. I think we need to put those officers back in their districts so they can be properly supervised and commanded by the local commanding officer who knows that district best. That, I think, would help. But these tactical units, God bless them, they're doing important work. They just don't have the information, the intel, the understanding of the actual neighborhoods they're being deployed to. And without that direct supervision from the local police in that district, it's just not going to be nearly as effective. So we need to see some major changes here because this is not working. And people should feel safe in their city no matter what neighborhood they live in.
To that point, we just talked about the reimagining of Michigan Avenue, because there are actually some really, I think, some good ideas coming out about making it more of an experiential play. You heard about the Dr. Seuss, The Office, The King Tut, all kinds of exhibits that may be coming there to Michigan Avenue. Unique, one-of-a-kind things. You're not going to a Forever 21, no insult to them, just you can get those everywhere. And this would be a unique experience. When we talked about this on the show, a lot of texts came in, though, about people still not feeling safe about coming downtown and that that wouldn't be enough for them. How do you address that?
Right. Well, look, to the part about the retail transformation on the Avenue, I think that was already starting to happen pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Apple store, the Verizon store, the AT&T store, those stores weren't so much about pushing product out the door as it was having inviting folks in to play with the stuff and try it out, and then maybe even have it ordered online and delivered to them. So the retail environment here was changing before COVID, before the civil unrest, before our spikes in crime. And that's just, that progression will continue. Mm-hmm. As far as public safety goes, again, you know, we're lucky that we do have good coverage on the major retail strips like State Street and the Mag Mile. But when you have hundreds of teenagers coming downtown at night with the sole purpose of causing mayhem, that's a lot for anyone to handle. And I'd like to see the city start doing a better job of enforcing the curfew laws we have on the books. I don't understand why there are 12 and 13-year-old children downtown at 2 and 3 in the morning committing crimes. It makes absolutely no sense to me. And so, you know, a lot has been done policy-wise to tie the hands of the police department the last 2 years, both in Springfield and here in Chicago. We need to let these officers do their jobs, and we need to ask them to use every tool in the tool bench to do it. And if that means enforcing curfew laws, I'm all for that.
When you say a lot has been done to tie their hands, speak to what you're seeing and hearing about.
Inexplicably, we have a no chase policy, not just vehicular, but also on foot. How are officers expected to apprehend suspects if they can't chase them, if they need permission to chase them first? That does not make any sense to me at all. That is, I think, a key policy problem that we have here in the city of Chicago. Officers need to be allowed to do their jobs. So that right there, I guess I'll leave it with that.
Yeah.
One, but I could go on for hours.
Sure. No, I hear you. And one of the things you posted to social media, I wanted to see if you could elaborate on a little bit, Alderman Riley, is cops catch offenders, victims identify offenders, video footage captures offenders, state's attorney still not convinced there's enough evidence, offenders set free to do it again, and people wonder why crime stats are up. I mean, is that just an isolated narrative? A lot of people would say, you know, the people are just saying that's isolated. In fact, I think the state's attorney's office often says that these are one officer, you know, small percentage of the overall situations. What do you think?
Yeah, I disagree with the state's attorney, and I think it's pretty well documented that I do. I think that Ms. Fox is a fine individual. I respect her as a person, but we have fundamental disagreements on policy. And the bottom line is crime is way up. And police officers are catching the bad guys, and the bad guys are not being prosecuted aggressively. We have a state's attorney who picks and chooses which crime she's going to prosecute and how aggressively. That's not her job. Her job is to put criminals in jail, period. You don't pick and choose which ones you're going to prosecute. So that is a fundamental disagreement that I have with the state's attorney. But she's not solely to blame. It's a blend of issues. First of which are the offenders themselves. Who's parenting these 13 and 14-year-old carjackers? Where are the parents? The police are doing the best they can with the resources they have. The court system, though, fails us every day. Electronic monitoring for folks who have committed murder? That's insanity. When you're accused of a capital crime, you should be in jail until that's sorted out. So I just think that a lot of the liberal police policies that have been put in place the last couple of years, now we're seeing the effect of those. And unfortunately, policies have consequences, and here we are. So I may not be a majority voice on this issue in Chicago, but as someone who is incredibly concerned about public safety, I've had it. I mean, I think most Chicagoans have had it. We want our city back. And we can't keep hamstringing the police when we need them to do their jobs to keep us safe.
And I hear that again and again from officers all the time. They want to do what's right. The overwhelming majority of them, the vast majority of officers, again, would risk their own life to save yours, and they do all the time. Officer French, yet another example of that, her partner as well. Let's continue to pray for him as he's fighting for his life. But, back to something you talked about, that you're removing the tools that allow them to do their job and get people off the streets. You said that there's a no chase policy, no foot chase policy, or you're severely limited in those kinds of chases. What's happening with carjackings? How do you go after a carjacking suspect if you can't chase the vehicle? There's no foot chases allowed. I know an officer was dragged from a car just the other day.
Yeah.
How do you do it? How do we find anybody who is behind these?
Right. And obviously, the only way you prevent a carjacking from occurring is if you have a police officer literally on every corner. That's not something the city of Chicago has the luxury to afford. But once the crime has been, and certainly people need to be better educated on how to protect their belongings and their vehicles. If you're pulled over at a gas station filling up at the pump, lock the doors, right? If you're idling in a curb lane, lock the doors. Don't leave your car running and unattended, those kinds of things. But the police, I've been investing a lot of aldermanic menu money, discretionary money on aldermen can spend infrastructure to provide them with lots and lots of cameras. Not just the pod cameras that are like video cameras that watch cars and people, but also license plate readers. And what these do is they actually cycle all the license plates that drive by it through a database to see if a car has been reported stolen, carjacked. Does the driver have warrants? And the police can use that information to pull over that vehicle at a stoplight or in a parking lot, something like that. Mm-hmm. But the best tool, honestly, and I've been advocating for this for a couple years now, is getting a second and third helicopter in the air. That's how Los Angeles handles most of its carjackings, is they literally follow the car in the air until it either runs out of gas or lands at the final destination. And then they make the arrest. We need better coverage in the air if we're going to be able to catch these guys. Because it's for good reason, we don't have a hot pursuit policy that allows us to go on high-speed chases. Right. A lot of people get hurt that way. Helicopters are a safe tool to get at the problem.
Before I let you go, Alderman, I certainly appreciate your time. One of the things you mentioned is that the state's attorney, Kim Fox, is focusing on some crimes, not others. When she's come on WGN and various shows, she's talked about how she wants to focus on the most violent crimes, not the least violent ones, and that's where her focus is. We're starting to see some folks on the text line here as you're talking saying, so you just can't keep locking people up. That's not the answer either. And I just wonder, I know these are things you've heard before and you've thought a lot, great deal about. Do you want to speak to any of that just before I let you go?
Sure. Yeah, look, I'm not saying that we should be putting shoplifters in prison. Okay, if you're committing nonviolent offenses, I agree. That person should not be put into the jail system. There are other ways to get justice and have that person pay consequences, community service, those sorts of things. But if you're committing a crime with a gun, whether you're a juvenile, an adult, whether you pull the trigger or not, that has to be treated as a very, very serious crime, and you need to go to jail. Because there aren't consequences, real serious, severe consequences for committing a crime with a gun, people continue to do it. So I tend to agree with people. Nonviolent offenses should not be put in prison. But you do any crime with a gun, whether you pull the trigger or not, you should do jail time automatically, because that sends a message. We take those types of crimes very seriously. My guess is you'll see it drop off.
These are important conversations to have, Alderman. Thank you. Thanks for the time today, as always. Appreciate your availability to talk about these issues and willingness. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
It's good to be with you. Take care.
Alderman Brendan Riley there, 42nd Ward. We'll try to post that interview for you because I think he said a lot of interesting things that are worthy of much more conversation. And he's thought a lot about crime in his district, or his ward, I should say.